It's Friday. Yes, it's Friday. This is The Truth About Markets, the Paris podcast. September 8th, 2006. Hello.
Hi, Max.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
I'm eating a croissant.
Yeah, that's great. Really great, man. Yeah.
What's going on?
Blah, 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 blah. Well, we got some interesting emails this past week.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for sending your emails. We like to read your emails. Joe Bushy.
He sends many emails. He sends us links to things that we should watch or listen to.
He's like Karma Bank Research.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Bushy. Where's he, in Norway?
He's in Norway.
Yeah, Joe Bushy.
We also got an email, a blog comment last night from Dominic in Germany.
Oh, Dominic, yes. He's another one of our listeners, sends us good stuff.
And he's German, of course, so he responded to our RWE story. He said, I've seen nice coverage on Thames Water in German TV. They showed a London pub owner who has to constantly pump out his cellar because broken pipes would otherwise flood it immediately. He is doing it for almost a decade now, and the pumped out water makes up a nice little river in his backyard. The real beauty in the buyout of Thames Water through RWE lies within the fact that the German companies like RWE and E.ON are on a buying spree with money taken from maintenance. No spending on maintenance caused last winter in Nordrhein-Westfalen the huge overland wires to break like domino stones. Mm. No electricity for almost a week. The company's calculated the compensation has a limit and is a joke against the losses caused. Worth mentioning that Germany has one of the highest prices for electricity, and the company's now announced higher double-digit prices for next year.
Mm-hmm.
Last example comes from Deutsche Bahn, which runs the railroads, which has to pay for maintenance, but serious damages on the tracks are being paid for by the state. So Deutsche Bahn makes a little less maintenance to get far more expensive damage. Once right. again, privatized profits and socialized cost.
Right. Less maintenance, more profits.
Yeah, exactly. And then this
That's a good point he makes. Less maintenance, more profits. The less you maintain these systems, the more you make. This happens when you have a private company running this thing instead of the government.
Well, that's the argument that is often used, that if you owe somebody £1,000, you're in trouble. Or €1,000, you're in trouble. If you owe them €10 million, it's their problem.
Yeah.
So this is what these big corporations are doing. Like in Prudhoe Bay, BP allows their pipelines to corrode, causing massive damage. But then it becomes the government's problem, not theirs. They don't have to fix it.
Yeah, it's written down here, BP. You know, the same thing with pipes for oil. They don't. The less they maintain them, the more money they make.
Exactly.
Now they know that this formula works. They know that they have a guaranteed source of income, so they can afford to put out publicity, as in the case of BP, calling themselves BP Beyond Petroleum and greenwash themselves, and they can take a break from coming out with an ad campaign that suggests that BP, you know, we mark up oil incredibly and make rapacious profits, buy our stock. You know, no, they don't have to do that because they have a guaranteed income stream by spending less on maintenance and therefore reaping more in profits.
So that's the sole value added that these corporations do to public utilities and public infrastructure.
Is they don't maintain them less.
Exactly.
They don't maintain them. But we saw this in the UK. I mean, Germany is now getting a big full-on taste of what's been happening in the UK because, of course, Germany is going through quote-unquote deregulation. They've got Merkel in there, who's very friendly with the hedge fund community and the banking community. They've got the real estate market being gobbled up by institutional investors like Goldman Sachs. So this is the ghost of Christmas future is going to be Britain's, you know, current nightmarish situation with the hospitals, the education, and the transportation system all undergoing this hellacious inversion of logic, which is that maintain less, make more profits.
Wow.
And people get hurt. People get hurt. People die. And the government is effectively allowing this to happen. So they've taken this adversarial position against their own citizens.
Well, they act like a helpless victim of the market as well. That's the way markets are. They go up, they go down.
Mm-hmm.
And they kill people.
That's right. They blame the market. They blame the market. They refuse to acknowledge the fact that the markets themselves are rigged. Now, on this point, David Brooks, writing in the Herald Tribune today, trying to convince us that, in fact, markets are not rigged, according to this editorial in today's paper. And he said that the populists argue that the market is broken, the rules are rigged, the reigning ideology in Washington must be upended, unions must be revived, and globalization needs to be reorganized.
Well, that's not the only answer. He sets up a problem that the markets are rigged. Mm-hmm. And he says the only solution, if we address this rigged markets, is to do this, is to bring in heavy unions and stop globalization.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's interesting, it's quite telling, because he lists five interpretations of why the popular argument that suggests that markets are rigged is wrong. Of his 5 points that he lists, three of them are blatantly inconsistent with the facts on the ground. The other two are subject to debate. But then he ends up with this interesting sentence. Says that these days the working class is not falling behind the middle or upper middle classes. Instead, the big rise in inequalities within the office parks among people who were never unionized, middle managers, are falling behind the top executives.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is what we're talking about. In other words, if you examine who were the perpetrators of the 9/11 crime, middle-class guys. Who were the perpetrators of the 7/7 crime in Britain? Middle-class kids.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the people causing the violence in the world today that these administrations choose to call terrorism? Middle-class people who have been squeezed out from the upper echelons. That's your violent middle class. We saw it in the 1776 period. Thomas Jefferson is a squeezed out middle class guy who decided he wanted to take over a country and get rid of those overlord bums. And we're seeing it again today. It's a global insurrection against corporate occupation. So you've got this middle class with they've got the brains, they've got some access to money, and they're smart. The 9/11 was not something that organized by a bunch of field hands out there working 18 hours a day. You know, they don't have time. They're just struggling for survival. It's a disgruntled middle class that when cut out of the pie turns to these alternative routes, including what we're seeing around the world today, which is predictable given the fact that you've got exactly what's going on now as you had during various periods throughout history where you've got a small minority whose motto, as is pointed out in this email, is that the less we maintain social infrastructure, the more money we make.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, those middle-class 9/11 guys were led by one of the insider-type class of bin Laden being worth billions and billions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So this is kind of mirrored in the United States as well, or around the world. The middle-class people are often led by some insider who's angry, an angry insider. So I think maybe watch Ted Turner, see if he leads a group like bin Laden soon.
Well, Ted Turner, you know, he's been a rebel, corporate rebel, one of America's few corporate rebel class who, you know, really took on the powers that be in the news business. And he guaranteed to put $1 billion to the United Nations. And he did that horrible deal with Time Warner and America Online, and his billions got clipped quite substantially, and this really kicked Ted Turner in the teeth, and unfortunately, because he was a real rabble rouser out there, but unfortunately his trading portfolio was damaged greatly, and we don't hear a lot from him.
No.
Now in the hedge fund world, George Soros, of course, I think was a lot more active on the social transformation side when his portfolios were zooming up the charts. He had Stanley Druckenheimer, I think, was running the show there, and they were making some incredible gains. And then they made some really bad bets with the high-tech boom of the late 90s. George Soros actually quit the hedge fund business for a while. Then he got back into it. So, you know, you have one foot in both camps. You're interested in social social engineering, and you're also interested in making money and portfolio management, it's tough to keep those two going at the same time. You know, Bob Monks is a guy who's active in both spheres. He's looking for activism on the corporate boardroom for ecological changes. He's also a money manager advisor. He's managed money before. It's tough to do. I think that ultimately, as we say on this show, it's up to the individuals themselves to recognize that as a group, they have the ability to take control of these markets if they so do so. But I'm not going to get into that specifically right now. Let's move right along to a story we've been following for a while. U.S. crackdown claims chairman of Sportingbet.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. That was big news yesterday.
Yeah. Police warrant results in second airport arrest. Those airports are getting dangerous. Dangerous to go to the airport.
Well, that's part of the reason why I'm terrified to fly to America. Why would you want to? Everybody seems to get arrested there.
Legal fees cause sell-off on online gambling shares.
Yeah.
So the chairman of Sportingbet has become the second director of a U.S.-focused online bookmaker to be arrested in 3 months, prompting a further round of selling across London-listed gambling stocks. I mean, it's very fascinating because London is the money laundering capital of the world. All these gambling companies are focused there. All these Russian oligarchs are moving there. Hedge funds are there. And the real estate market is moving up as a result of all of this laundered money that flows through London. And Gordon Brown, the chancellor, has said that he's aware of it. It is a bit of a legal conundrum, but he'd rather take the tax revenue than clean up the illegal money practices that are taking place there. And you know, unfortunately, what happens is when you set that kind of example, you end up with trouble on the other side of the social spectrum. The rise in ASBOs, the rise in knife crime, the rise in gun crime, the rise in all kinds of ills.
Well, the whole London market, the city of London, it just reads like it's Wild West. You know, you've got these criminals, these snake oil salesmen. Anything seems to be able to float on the London market.
Mm-hmm.
It's remarkable that there have been no lawsuits yet about all the losses that are being incurred.
Well, because I remember in a bull market, you know, you can hide a lot of the losses. What happens is, I know this from experience, if you have a customer that maybe lost, let's say they've got a $1 million portfolio and they lost $100,000, what you can do is you can say, hello, Mr. Customer, I know you're upset, but we've got this hot initial public offering coming out next week. It'll probably pop, you know, 50% day one. And so we're going to put some stock in your account and we're going to make up that $100,000 loss and you're going to be made whole.
Mm-hmm.
So a bull market hides virtually all sins in this type of environment. The customers who are upset that they're losing money, they receive personal attention in this way. And the brokerage firms always have a slush fund that they're maintaining for these purposes, to fill in the gaps of customers that have sudden losses and would result in some legal proceedings. They can always just dump cash into their account. You know, there's the, I've explained it before on this show, this concept of the look-back trade, which is an easy way to affect this. You know, a broker will walk into the office in the morning, he'll contact his trading desk, and he'll instruct the trading desk to buy 100 options of a volatile stock, let's say one of these online sporting bet trading gambling companies. Buy mm-hmm. me 100 options.
Mm-hmm.
But he won't give the trader an account number. Now, at the end of the day, because the stock is so volatile, the options are either going to be booking a pretty nice profit or a pretty big loss. If it's a profit, then he will give the account number of the customer that says they're going to sue him to make up some losses. If it's a big loss, they stick it into a corporate account where a corporation may need some trading losses to offset gains to mitigate their tax liability. So it's a no-lose situation. The broker makes a commission. The trader on the DEX makes a commission. The customer's happy. Everyone's happy.
I mean, the other thing I notice is that probably the investor, him or herself, they no longer really think of stock market flotations and stock market trading as investing in capitalism. They see it as gambling, just outright gambling. And the other thing seems to be that all these online betting companies, all of their, when they floated in the last year or two, they all said, our activities are illegal, our business is illegal, and in our largest market in the world, you know, party gaming, 90% of their income came from America, and they said it's illegal and we could be arrested, blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah. But this doesn't seem to stop anybody because everybody is trained to expect a 40% pop on the first day of any stock trading.
Right.
I guess you've seen this mentality. Everybody thinks, I'm going to take that 30% pop and then get out straight away. But of course, somebody has to lose.
Well, you make up a good point, though, which is that the companies who brought these companies public, the banks, mm-hmm. did so knowing that the U.S. is not a market that will allow for this gambling product to exist,
yeah.
even though 90% of their profits come from the U.S. So the bank that takes this company public is taking a huge gamble.
Exactly.
So why is this company being brought on charges of gambling, promoting gambling, and not the banker that took the company public? The banker who took the company public is taking as much of a gamble as the company is promoting gambling, because 90% of the revenues come from the U.S., and in the U.S., this type of gambling is illegal. So why don't they arrest the head of the investment bank who took the company public? And, of course, the usual names pop up. You've got Goldman Sachs in there, Merrill Lynch, and the rest of the investment banks that take these companies public. They're gambling. It was a clear-cut case of gambling. The odds were just like you get at a roulette wheel. Now, why aren't they being arrested at the airport, too? Hank Paulson, who was running Goldman Sachs, he wasn't arrested at the airport for promoting gambling. He was made the Treasury Secretary in the White House so that he can actually change the odds in favor of Goldman Sachs. He can sell his Goldman Sachs stock at a huge tax abatement, and then he can go back to Goldman Sachs in a couple of years, get all that stock back, having booked incredible gains, virtually tax-free. Now, that's you see, you're rewarding criminality. It's not just about, they talk about David Brooks, getting back to the story that's in the Times here.
Yep.
He's talking about the myths of income inequality. He's trying to say that the markets are not rigged and that the markets are... He says, in fact, the markets are working too well.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. It says the market isn't broken. The meritocracy is working almost too well.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, sure. It's all meritocracy. Yeah, just look at the names in the White House and in the high offices of banks and various corporations. They're all inherited.
Well, aside from the sophistry he uses to bend the story to his will to make it appear as though the markets are not rigged, he fails to include two big pieces of the risk picture. You know, this is very typical of someone writing about the markets, is that they will look at wages, they'll look at net worths, and they'll look at various other government statistics. And these statistics themselves are cooked. They're not accurate depictions of what's going on. But they always fail to include two basic pieces of the puzzle. Number one is the effect of what he calls a meritocracy and this wealth creation machine on the ecology. You know, as we're seeing in Hong Kong, you have hedge fund managers there who are saying that, look, I've got kids. I can't live in Hong Kong because it's so polluted based on what we're doing here at the hedge fund, and I've got to move out.
And then also this weekend, they were saying that corporations based in the Far East, any of the U.S. corporations' headquarters over there, they have to pay more and more money to convince people to actually be based in Hong Kong.
For this reason. So this is not factored into his analysis, which is too bad because you're not factoring in a substantial piece of the puzzle. You're trying to paint by numbers without using anything above a 3.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a very very limited picture as a result.
Yeah.
And you see, he's not including this ecological component. And we are now at the point where economy and ecology are butting up against each other. You read stories about this every single day now, how companies are reporting less profits because of the ecological costs that for years they've been pushed off the balance sheet, but are now finding their way back onto the balance sheet. Companies who rely on water, they can't get water anymore because of the amount of water is shrinking due to toxicity and pollution. The one we just mentioned where actual partners at funds are splitting up and having office fights because one has a family and can't afford to breathe in the oxygen and the air that's been soiled by the hedge fund's activity. And the other one's saying, well, I don't have any kids. I don't care. I'm older. I want to make as much money as I can. I don't care about you and your kids. So this is a civil war brewing between the generations. It's an intergenerational war. We've talked about that before. This 70-year-old generation that's still kicking around in the banking suites says, what do I care if you and your kids are going to die from air pollution? I don't care because I'm on my way out. You know, that's the way it is. Dog eat door. It's a meritocracy.
But that's, you know, the problem you just pointed out between those two hedge fund managers just made me recognize in that argument, America, because America, we know famously the Americans have very little aesthetic sense. You know, everything is very plastic and prefab and temporary. And also their health. Americans are the least healthy in the Western world.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they just, you know, as we were arguing earlier in the week, they're pre-Descartes. They just accept that they are lacking in health.
And that's God's will.
That's God's will.
Yeah.
This is the way things are. So they don't even realize that it is they causing the pollution that is causing them to die and, well, suffer so much of their life.
Mm-hmm. So they fail to put the eco costs.
Mm-hmm.
He fails to put the 9/11 costs,
mm-hmm.
again, because they like to say, consider the 9/11 events as being, as you say, a pre-Descartes event, that it's you know, good versus evil, that there's no connection between British Petroleum and Exxon's destruction of the global climate and the rise of a violent middle class. They don't see the connection.
Well, exactly. You know, that's so obvious when you think pre-Descartes, it was ear. You could hear through your ear because an ear had hearing quality. You could breathe through your nose because the nose has breathing quality. Well, this is the argument, the extent of the curiosity about terrorism in the American population. They think Bin Laden and his men crashed into the 9/11 World Trade Center towers because they have evil qualities.
That's right.
That's it. There is no cause to it.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly right. They have evil qualities.
Exactly. That's it. This is how they paint it. This is the only thing, the extent of the dialogue and the debate in America about this issue.
That's right. They have terrorist qualities.
Mm-hmm.
And this is right. This is pre-Descartes thinking. This has nothing to do with establishing a cause or Euclidean or Cartesian geometric relationships.
Mm-hmm.
There's no A equals B, B equals C, therefore A equals C. There's no syllogism. There's no attempt to connect the dots whatsoever. It's just, well, it's God's will to create terrorists, and we need to fight the terrorists because that's God's will, and we're going to discount the last 400 years of knowledge as if it never existed. We're just going to scrape that off the plate, and we're going to go back 400 years, and we're going to fight evil.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, linking all this to Descartes, now, Descartes, the reason why he started to question things was because he lived near a butcher's. So what he did is he would look at the carcasses and examine them. And what he found, of course, was like in a pig carcass and in the cow carcass and in the lamb carcass, he would see that all of them had like little tubes going from their ear into their brain, mm-hmm. like nerves. So he said, well, maybe that's why the ear has hearing qualities. Maybe something's going on in there.
And maybe there's a connection.
Maybe there's a connection. And what happened? The church flipped out. They excommunicated him. They were saying, we must kill this man. You cannot question God.
That's right.
You're unpatriotic.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, on this show we say the planes hit the Twin Towers, and then the government in Washington says it's because the people who hijacked the planes have evil tendencies. What we did is we said, well, wait a minute. Let's look who was working in the towers. Well, there were hundreds and hundreds of bankers, and their full-time job is to rape, pillage, and steal wealth from poor countries and put it into their own pockets. And there's a connection there.
And we also looked at the cockpit doors.
Cockpit doors, which any of these airplanes or airlines or airports could have insisted that these companies spend $50 and make them secure. But, of course, they're too cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have contempt for, you know, why would they treat their flying passengers any better than McDonald's treats their restaurant customers? They don't care about the customers. They know that Americans aren't going to stop shtupping and creating more consumers.
And then we looked at this guy. Okay, they say Bin Laden has done this. Then we look at his writings or why he's done this. And just, I mean, it's not actually very difficult because he warned for about 15 years that he was going to do something unless America got out of Saudi Arabia.
Right.
Get your army base out of Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like it was evil just erupted from nowhere.
Right. Saudi Arabia is part of OPEC, and they fix prices. And that has been driving the economy in America for many years. And again, David Brooks is trying to say in today's New York Times that prices are not fixed or rigged. And yet, two major planks of the economy, the price of oil and the price of money from the Federal Reserve, are fixed.
Mm-hmm.
By the Federal Reserve, fixes the price of money. It doesn't allow the market to set the price of money. And OPEC fixes the price of oil for the most part, and they don't allow the market to set that price either.
No.
Or how about China and the doing trade with America? There is a fixed U.S. yuan exchange rate. That's not a free market there either. That means the market's rigged. It's a rigged market, and it's contributing to a huge trade problem in America with a rigged market, a huge real estate bubble in America due to a rigged Federal Reserve, and a huge dependence on foreign oil, which is leading to all these violent acts, which is based on a rigged market with OPEC. And here you have David Brooks arguing that the markets aren't rigged. Show me the market that isn't rigged.
Well, what is he responding to? Why is he writing this?
He's writing this because probably somebody heard our show.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think obviously, what he's probably responding to is this recent announcement, I guess this week, that the SEC said that there are more indictments coming on this backdating stock options and insider trading.
Right.
So David Brooks kind of has to calm the population, making sure that they don't want to overthrow or investigate whether or not we even have capitalism. So, you know, he's preempting. This is like a preemptive
action. It's a preemptive move, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
They're trying to lay the groundwork and put in the bullet points and then to use the very words.
Mm-hmm.
That people are going to say,
yeah,
against them before the conversation even begins. Because, you know, in America, it's clear that they've decided to go down the path of fascism.
Mm-hmm.
So to preempt that word, Bush has said, these aren't terrorists, these are fascists.
Yeah.
It's clear that America's markets are rigged. So here you have David Brooks coming out and saying, they're not rigged. But the conversation hasn't even started yet. But they're saying that they're not rigged. So then the bullet points goes out to the right-wing press and they know immediately to say, whatever you do, just keeps repeating, the markets aren't rigged.
Well, they do that because of that pre-Descartes thing. They keep on saying, the markets are not rigged. The markets are not rigged. And this is what people take on faith, therefore. So
that's
when
right.
Somebody comes around and says, the markets are rigged, they say, oh, heretic. There's a heretic.
Exactly. The priest said that they aren't rigged.
Exactly.
So, you know, we were trying to come up with a name for a concept for a show recently. And, you know, it's like almost the show could be almost Café Descartes. Because so much of what we're talking about here is the fact that the world in the year 2000 with the coup d'etat in the U.S. went very aggressively back to a pre-Descartes faith-based world.
Well, but also all of the globalization, for example, everything is about let the markets decide. Just the markets have decided. That's it. Don't investigate. Don't understand. Don't be inquisitive.
That's right. They've turned the markets into the papacy.
Exactly. That you cannot question.
Right.
Because markets are perfect. That's what you always hear. Markets are perfect.
Yeah, markets are perfect, like God. And again, you know, that woman is arguing that we should actually bring in the terror futures market, the virtual terror futures market, to help us know where the terrorists are, because markets are perfect. Markets are God.
She says exactly that, that markets are perfect.
Well, this is a complete bastardization of the very notion of what markets are all about. And they've been risen to this on this pedestal. They've been put on this pedestal of perfection, which is completely counterproductive to anything that's happened in the last 400 years. This is, I think, the problem. I can see it clearly now, is that people tend to think that politics and society went wrong in the year 2000, or it went wrong in the 1960s, or it went wrong in the 1980s, or it went wrong in the 1950s. Well, really, you really have to get a historical bead on this, that the problem, to understand it in its full entirety, you have to go back to the year 1600 and the beginning of René Descartes' era of reason, of question, of doubt, to understand that how bad the situation is. To understand how bad the situation is, you have to understand that what the marketeers and the bankers and the politicians want us to believe now is that the last 400 years hasn't existed, that it's actually the markets are God, and that they're infallible, and therefore we should simply accept the fact that all U.S. taxpayers should give their money over to the government so that they can, quote-unquote, fight evil, which they fail to describe with any more detail than that, but all it does is ends up going into the pockets of their cronies and contracting buddies. So, you know, it's what Americans doesn't pay tax. They pay a papal indulgence.
Mm-hmm.
They're paying an indulgence. You know, the government's saying, give us your money and we'll keep you safe. Give us your money, you know, we'll send you to heaven. We won't let you get, you know, the evil. We'll keep you safe from evil. This is a stupid. And then this led to the Reformation of the Protestant movement,
mm-hmm.
of you know,
Martin Luther.
Martin Luther. Mm-hmm. What year was that?
That was around, I don't know, in that time, 1600s.
Yeah, I think it was about the same time.
Yeah.
Let's check the Wikipedia on this one, because again, what the power class is saying is that they simply want everyone to trust them to fight to keep them safe from quote unquote evil, when all it is at the end of the day, it's a shakedown. And they're not delivering services. They're not delivering democracy. They're not delivering safety. It's a complete and utter. Well, I see that
he's a bit before, just before Descartes. Actually, he died in 1546. Mm-hmm. He was a German monk. His teachings inspired the Reformation and deeply influenced the doctrines and culture of the Lutheran Protestant traditions. Yeah, so he helped reform the church, only in terms of not stealing from the people.
Right.
So that was the beginning of it. That's kind of what America needs now. First of all, you need a Martin Luther who will tell the priests of it today, i.e. the stockbrokers and hedge fund managers, to stop stealing from the people.
Right.
And then you need a Descartes to come back in.
Right. This is where we're at, the mid-millennium.
But yeah, in terms of this, you know, the new market God, this clashes now with Bush's new proposed law, whereby any individual, he says, in the world,
mm-hmm.
can be an enemy combatant if they are hostile to America.
That's
so
right.
They even lowered the bar on who, because before it used to be a non-citizen of America.
That's right.
Now it's anybody in the world. And it used to be like military-type hostilities that these guys were involved with. Now it's any hostility. So if you're hostile to rigged markets,
that's right,
you could be an enemy combatant and thrown into a place that doesn't exist to the rest of the world.
That's right. That's the power he's seeking right now, because in response to the Supreme Court shutting him down from committing acts of constitutional fraud, he wants to pass new laws that bypasses the Supreme Court, bypasses the U.S. Constitution and Bill of Rights, creates a parallel government, which gives him the right to call anyone, including American citizens, hostile, and effectively put them into a prison.
Put them into purgatory, really.
Put them into purgatory, exactly.
It's like a place that you can't get out of, where you're tortured and suffer, but it's here on Earth. It's midway between Earth and heaven.
Yeah. That's right. And even if it means, let's say, journalists that get put into the that they're classified as hostile,
mm-hmm.
they don't even have to torture them. All you need to do is just to put them into virtual purgatory by just cutting them off from society. I mean, you have
exactly.
to keep them under house arrest.
Yeah,
you've got everything bugged. They can't communicate really without being spied on, and they're just frozen in time. They're in purgatory. And this is so, and of course the threat is that if you try to rebel, then we'll put you into a torture camp. Now, this is the power that he seeks, and this is the power that he believes he needs to fight a very nebulous concept called terrorism without any description of the total picture of what causes these events to take place.
Mm-hmm.
In exactly the same way that going back to the mid-millennial period, where you had Catholic priests simply saying that, we have the only franchise to get you into heaven. Either you pay us a papal indulgency, yeah. or we're going to send you to purgatory, or we're going to send you to hell.
Mm-hmm.
And, this simply did not truck with the vast peasantry out there.
Yeah.
The only thing that saved, the only thing really, the greatest thing that ever happened to the middle classes was the Black Plague. Because as we know, the Black Plague wiped out half of Europe's population. And as a result, peasants suddenly had bargaining power.
Mm-hmm.
Peasants could actually start shops, artisan shops, artisanal metal and wood and things. And this gave birth to the rising middle class.
But it's also the people like Martin Luther or Descartes who told people, empowered them, basically, said you don't need to be scared. And that's the opposite of what's going on in America right now. They're being told constantly on the media to be scared and just don't ask questions about what we're doing with your tax money, militarizing our state, because we're protecting you. We're doing this to protect you. I promise you.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you're going to have a wave of Americans looking to get out of America.
Mm-hmm.
And seek political asylum in countries outside of America. We hear about it every day. People who, as we said, during the 30s and 40s, the smarty pants out there, the smart people, the Jews, the Jews, I think, are persecuted throughout history. They typically have a very developed antenna toward this type of move toward totalitarianism. But they've been through this for thousands of years. They know totalitarian schmuck when they see one. So if you want to fool your society, first, shut down the Jews, because they're going to communicate to the society what's going on, and you don't want that. You don't want your society to remain as stupid for as long as possible. Jews didn't get to be a successful people by being stupid. It's all based on. I believe it was the first codified religious movement that was held within the pages of a very portable book. The Bible is not, portable for nothing. It's like, Morty, pick up the Bible and let's get the hell out of here, because those totalitarian schmucks are at it again.
You think so?
This has led to, this is why they're always persecuted, in my opinion, is because they've got the most developed antenna toward totalitarianism. Now, if you flash forward to the current situation in Israel and Palestine, the greatest tragedy is that the Jews in Israel are not responding as they have traditionally done. What's the big point about even having a home country, a home state? Because it doesn't fit with this idea. I mean, the Jewish diaspora has a network that's a self-serving, self-perpetuating, growing network all over the world. The diaspora is a very, very effective, growing, powerful network. Why even bother having a homeland, so to speak? It's just not working out. What would be the big deal to simply disband the country? The power of the global Jewish community would not diminish one bit. It would, in fact, increase, because right now, by trying to establish this artificial country in the middle of Arabia, in the middle of Arab states, all it's doing is it's bringing on a lot of unwelcome attention, which is not in the best long-term interests. I don't understand why. You know, I grew up in New York surrounded by Jews. I think I have a good appreciation of the Jewish mind and the way it thinks. And the risk-reward profile of having this state in the middle of the Arab world is not good. It doesn't make any sense. It's not a good idea. It doesn't give good upside there. And this is ultimately, I think, what I just don't get. Why bother with this? It doesn't make any. You don't get anything out of it. I don't know. It doesn't seem ultimately to have a huge long-term upside. But, you know, I mean, that's my thought on the matter. I mean, I'm open to your thought on the matter. Maybe you think I'm wrong. I don't know. It's just my thought. Who knows? I mean, that's clearly something's not working. They're losing this skirmish with Lebanon has been a huge disaster.
Well, they responded to racism by developing a racist state. America has tried to combat terrorism by becoming bigger terrorists. Now, this goes back to our Bush laws. Yesterday, Bush also admitted to these secret prisons, these secret CIA prisons, because up until now they've denied it, right? Mm. But now yesterday, Bush administration cautioned countries with those secret CIA prisons in their territory against disclosing the site's existence, even as a European Parliament renewed its demand that its members come clean if they host such detention centers.
Right.
So this is another new rift developing within this well, we already see Tony Blair is out of there because of the Middle East situation that he has helped construct by allying himself with Bush. Now we see this is going to be the next thing. Do these European leaders meet the demands of their citizens to know if they have any of these gulag torture chambers? Or do they side with America and protect the emperor? Do they risk the wrath of the emperor?
Well, where does Bush get off lecturing Europeans on this notion?
Yeah, we're lecturing you. Don't you dare tell anybody about our illegal torture chambers.
What's that all about? you know, again, it, because he's fighting evil. You know, the response should be, I think, therefore I'm anti-Bush. This is what the European mind should be. If you're a thinking person, you can't be pro-Bush because he's not using reason. You know, since 1600, since the rise of Descartes, the question, it's always been a question of doubt. You know, prove it to me. Where's the proof? You know, he took on the church, didn't he? He said, where's the proof of what you're saying is actually happening? Where's all the proof? Just show me some proof. And, of course, there is no proof because it's gobbledygook, and it's a residue from ritualistic, you know, sacrificial ceremonies from, you know, hundreds of, from old ancient times when man was, you know, living right with animals, basically. And you had very interesting cohabitation going on there. And then you had the rise of the Catholic Church and all the rituals that go with it that were, you know, what is the whole Eucharist? Is you're eating the bones of Christ and drinking Christ's blood? Does that sound reasonable to you?
Well, in terms of where is the proof, the State Department urged the countries that host these CIA prisons to keep quiet because the administration wants the practice to continue and, quote, certain aspects of it should not be discussed. Now, State Department spokesman Sean McCormick says there are just certain lines we have decided we are not going to cross. They're not offering proof, though. They won't allow the International Committee of the Red Cross to meet these prisoners. They won't allow anybody to look at the prisons. Mm-hmm. They just say, trust us.
Well, it's just completely unreasonable. Show us the proof.
Exactly.
Show us the proof. Plus, they've had 5 years grace period to demonstrate that they know what they're doing, and they have failed. Afghanistan is worse than ever. The opium crop is biggest has ever been. Iraq, total failure. Lebanon, failure by Israel to push into there. Bin Laden, not captured. You know, they have not done anything. They have not succeeded in any way. By any stretch of the imagination, can you say that they have succeeded? Plus, if you go back to this kickoff point of all this and the 9/11, I mean, what are we really talking about there? 3,000 lives lost and a couple of buildings went down. And in the grand scheme of things, the historical scheme of things, this is this happens every week somewhere. Some ecological disaster, BP or Exxon or something, somebody like this is committing some eco crime that's wiping out thousands of lives, people of thousands of immigrations, climate immigrants roaming the world, Africa embroiled in wars due to weapons being sold by U.S. Affiliates. It's happening every single day. Why are we just looking at an event from 5 years ago as if there's never been an act of violence since then, and there was never an act of violence before then? Why look at that one day, that one event, and base an entire global order based on that event without giving any attempt at the causes or any surrounding circumstances, purely looking at it in a vacuum and saying this is quote-unquote evil, and you need it's just faith. Give us your faith without any supporting documents, without any supporting arguments at all. Just give us your faith to fight this because of this one event that in the grand scheme of things is a pinprick.
Well, maybe they're... the answer lies in the fact that we're saying they're going back to pre-Descartes times, and they want a religion to be formed around the office of the White House and the stock market. So what better way than to focus on just one event like the Christian religions do? They focus on Jesus being sacrificed at the cross.
Right.
And this is what they're trying to do with 9/11.
It's Christianity 2.0.
Exactly. I'm sure in 100 years' time, there will be Bibles saying that Jesus arose in the ashes of the ground zero.
It's the New Testament.
Yeah, the Bush version.
But yeah, Bush is painting himself up as the heir to Jesus Christ, which, of course, everyone kind of suspected. But his rhetoric is becoming perilously close to this.
Mm-hmm.
That, they should, on the anniversary of 9/11, they're going to set up a little, is he going to walk on the East River? You know, they get Steven Spielberg to do a little movie magic down there. He'll walk across the East River.
Wow, that'll
into 9/11 and declare himself the beginning of the new Testament.
I'm surprised he hasn't painted Katrina yet as part of the Great Flood.
He gets up in his Moses outfit and goes down there.
That's why he only sent a loaf of bread down there. He right. Was confused. Send them my loaf of bread.
And some fishes. And I'll feed all the Katrina victims with a loaf of bread and some fish. And he believes that this is what happened.
I'm sure he does. He's on his Xanax, locked in his Oval Office, and just in rapture.
Well, the power that he seeks. Now, Europe is at a juncture, a critical juncture. You know, one of the bastard has been the UK, because the UK has been on board with Bush the whole time and has turned its back on continental Europe. The people in Italy got rid of that scoundrel, Berlusconi. The people in Spain got rid of their scoundrel. And now the people in the UK are going to be getting rid of one of the co-architects of their misery, Tony Blair. And that's 3 out of 4 big ones. And then Bush, is facing a test in November. And unfortunately, I have a sneaking suspicion that, as we were talking about yesterday, this November election is going to be horribly, horribly rigged.
Mm-hmm. Well, Blair is somebody I would watch out for. I think he could end up being a genuine Bin Laden-like character. Because Bin Laden, a lot of his rage is driven by the fact that he was he went to the Saudi royal family and offered his help, his military help, and they turned him down. So he took that as rejection. So Blair, I think he clearly doesn't like this rejection. And I'm sure he'll go lead a pack of men to do something pretty awful. It might be a pack of bankers, might take down the whole UK economy.
Yeah.
But it'll be something.
He is. He's the C of E Bin Laden.
Exactly.
He's the Bin Laden of the B of E.
The C of E.
The C
of
E.
Oh, the Bank of England or
no,
the Church of England?
No, I'm thinking of the Church of England.
Church of England.
The C of E.
Uh-huh.
He's the... Yeah, I agree. He could be the UK's Bin Laden. In a couple of years' time, he and a group of bankers and Murdoch will create some massively destructive day.
Well... Of course, because, the thing that drives him more than money is fame, but historical fame. And we know Bin Laden will be in the history books forever. And Blair will be a footnote unless he does something equivalent to what Bin Laden does.
Well, I agree with you. Sad, but true. Well, that's it for our daily podcast, Monday through Friday, and now we begin our weekend podcast.
We'll see you in a few minutes, okay? Bye.